This is the Amp Hour Podcast, released April 24th, 2024, episode 665, Really Long Needle Nose Pliers.
Welcome to the Amp Hour. I'm Dave Jones from the EEV blog.
And I'm Chris Gamble of Contextual Electronics.
I think I found it.
You got it.
I think I found my problem. Those who couldn't hear the pre-show because, well, you can't hear us talk before the show.
Yeah, right.
I thought that I had a problem with my Rode microphone. It was like giving some sort of weirdy audio compression-y kind of effect. I don't know. Something weird I couldn't quite nail down. And I was just adjusting the volume on my, I'm listening through to Chris through headphones at the moment, through my Scarlett, Scarlett's the brand, USB preampy interface thing, yeah. Even though I don't use it as a preamp these days because I've got a direct USB mic, but I use it to power my studio monitors, which I listen to all my audio through. And I adjusted the pot and then your
signal chain issues.
Yeah. Your voice just started like fading from one channel to the other, and it was very weird.
Yeah.
And the pot really crackles. Like, you know, like I turn it up, and it's just absolutely awful. So I think there's some funny business going on there. That could be the problem. I blame
non-linearities caused by dust. Yeah.
I blame Rode. I was starting to think that was something wrong for my Rode.
I mean, there's still a possibility, right? You can't.
Of course.
You got to like remove it from the system, and yeah, you got to. Yep. Lots of different things there, but yeah, that is super frustrating.
Yeah.
Honestly, this is like what I use. You know, I used to have a lot of audio equipment, you know, like audio, like instruments and things like that. I used to have like a Wurlitzer 200 and it's so cool to have like this analog sound, and you know, I don't miss it. I miss
really.
Yeah, it's just like it's a very cool instrument.
You were boasting.
I used to love it. I used to, you know, it was like a cool instrument, but it's just. The amount you have to like do in order to make it sound good is like, it's like a, there's the whole industry around that, you know, like making it, you know, maintaining old analog electronics is like, it's a hard thing to do. So, finicky stuff, you give up a little bit in terms of sound quality, maybe if you go to like a digital piano, like I have now, but, maintenance goes way down. That's for sure.
Well, I'm going to have to do a bloody diagnosis and repair video on this turd because, so I'll have to feed like the headphone amplifier into my camera so that I can actually independently record what I'm hearing and
see
if other people hear and then make sure I'm not going crazy.
I think it was Jeremy Hong. I think it was Jeremy, who's been on the show. He was on one of the shows where I was at a conference I recorded a long time ago, but he was talking about having a Keithley 2015.
Yes. Yep.
Which has like a total harmonic distortion.
Yes, I have one of those. Yeah.
Yeah, there you go. So you could pass a sine wave through it and like see what that looks like too. That'd be kind of interesting.
Right. Yeah, it could.
I never did that in this case, right?
It's a channel thing. It seems to be like there's something weird happening with the channels. Well, because that's only you'd only be measuring a single channel then. You would need like a dual channel analyzer. You'd need like a.
Aside from like a total harmonic distortion thing, you could also put a sine wave through it.
Yes.
Look at it on a scope and be oh, look.
There's a bunch of noise
on that sine wave, you know, like a bunch of harmonics coming through.
I could feed in.
Yeah, it'd be interesting.
Yeah, I could feed it. Mm. I think this might have external audio in. I have to check. I can't see the back of it at the moment. But if it does, also, I can put it on the bench and feed in a signal and scope it.
There's an analyzer on the Digilent one, the Analog Discovery.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I've always wondered about it because it's like, it doesn't, you know, it only has like up to megahertz output.
Oh, well, let me see. Heaps for audio. Fine for audio.
Yeah, but for audio, it'd be fine, right?
It's basically how real time it is so that, you know, I can move the pot and get the itchy and scratchy thing happening with
itchy
the pot on.
Itchy and scratchy show.
So I can get the itchy and scratchy show happening. If you can see that in real time as you, you know, tweak it and stuff like that. But I can certainly hear it. There's that all that scratchiness. Yeah, exactly. But
the old analog cochlear detectors, huh?
Right. Yes. Yeah. But yeah, so it might be, and I assume that the volume control obviously controls both the headphone output and the line out, which goes to my speakers, because I feed the line out of these into my two powered studio monitor speakers. So you know, I presume I'm going to hear them both because the output and the pot, they're obviously like, it obviously has an analog pot in there because it's doing the itchy and scratchy. So and then that feeds into the line out, just then splits into like straight to line out to the speakers and then into the headphone amp, which drives the headphones.
Separate headphone amp too. Okay, so you don't listen direct out of that
USB
interface
thing. Oh, yes, I am. It's actually got a headphone amp built in. It's got like
You could just have like one in each ear kind of thing if you wanted to.
Yes. Yep.
Yeah. Interesting.
So, anyway. Yeah. Yeah, okay. So that may be the source of, because I couldn't quite nail down why, because I was listening to my edit the other day, voiceover edit for my latest video, and I'm like, that doesn't sound right. Like, it's...
Yeah, it's like a squeaky Australian voice coming out of the speakers, you know?
I don't know, so... natural, itchy, and scratchy. Yep.
There you go. Bingo. Yep.
Oh, boy. Yeah. Anyway, speaking of not trusting old stuff, is that what you said? Something like that.
I guess anyway, so. You mean something. Like authority? You mean like I don't trust authority?
No. Old equipment, you know, analog
gear
equipment.
Yeah, old people. Old, yeah, no, yeah. Old yes, analog equipment. That's what I was saying.
Yes. What okay. you can what trust.
What can you trust, Dave? Dave, Voyager, tell me, what can you trust?
The Voyager 1 probe. It's back, baby.
Never going to get it down. Never going to stop transmitting.
This is great. It just popped up this morning. I think we might have talked about it, mentioned it like 6 months ago.
I don't think so. I don't
know.
Maybe.
Okay.
I remember seeing the story by.
Maybe I'm confusing it with just seeing the story. But
maybe it was your other podcast.
It's been spewing out garbage. Like, it hasn't just completely died. It was like just spewing out garbage.
Dark. It didn't go
down? No, it was spewing out garbage data.
Okay.
I believe was the existing, So
is Voyager 2 dark? I thought one of them went dark.
No. Voyager 2 is still going, as far as I know.
All right, great.
It stopped on November 14th. So it stopped sending readable service and engineering data. Even though they could still somehow tell that the spacecraft was still receiving the commands. So the processor on there was working, processor in quote marks, was working, and and it was otherwise operating normally, but it was returning garbage. And they thought, because quite a few things have failed on this thing, and they keep, shutting down things as they fail. And it turns out, it took them, 3 or 4 months or something, but they finally figured it out, and they were able to shut down a system on it, and now it's responding, and now it's returning regular data again. It's back in business.
I cannot even imagine. We're talking troubleshooting it with stereo headphone thing. Can you imagine that with the freaking Voyager 1?
Outside of the solar system.
Yeah, I know. Like, that's one thing. And then just the round trip times and just...
Yeah.
You're just working with 1970s. I guess you are talking most of 1970s electronics, although not USB.
Yeah. But hats off to the design team for making it so flexible and completely reprogrammable. I mean, there's no flash memory on there that they can reprogram, but they can reprogram. Yeah, it uses tape, uses magnetic tape for storage. So there's a physical tape on there that spins around a head that reads it and stuff like that. I think they use some core memory on it though, for the basic underlying core operating system or something. If that's the correct term even?
Probably not an operating system. No, I would say like the core routines maybe.
The core routines or something like that. Yeah. And they are able to reprogram this thing to actually get around problems just like this, and they did it. And so they discovered a chip responsible for storing a portion of the SDS memory. Flight data system, maybe that means, including some of the FDS computer software code isn't working. The loss of that code rendered the science and engineering data unusable. So unable to repair the chip, obviously, You know, it's a big call out fee to go across the outside of the known solar system.
Does anyone have some really long pliers?
Really long needle nose. Yeah. The team decided to place the effective code elsewhere. So they moved the code into another part of the memory. But no single location is large enough to hold the section of code entirely. So they devised a plan. Here we go. I haven't read this yet. So they devised a plan to divide affected
subtitle for the story, for the show, rather.
Yeah. I haven't read this yet.
I haven't read this yet. Yes, can we label it that? Yes, that is today's title. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, mark it down. So they devised a plan to divide the affected code into sections and store these sections in different places. And then I guess they use like jumps, you know, like jumps go-tos. In memory. Well, instead of line 10, it's a direct memory address, you know.
Yeah, right.
So it's anyway.
It's a coordinate system. Jump coordinates.
So to make this plan work, they also needed to adjust those code sections to ensure, for example, that they all still function as a whole. Any references to the location of that code in other parts of the FDS memory needed to be updated as well. Who's doing this? Who has the knowledge to do this? I need to know. Maybe we can get them on the show because this is.
I bet they're not the most youthful people, you know, they are badasses. That is for damn sure.
Well, there's a photo here, and there's lots of grey involved the people applauding around the round table. Both the men and the women are not young.
They're not useful. They shouldn't be. They're the top of their damn field. That's what they are.
And they're probably like in the early 20s when they worked on it.
They're long-term stewards, you know? Like that's
This is insane. So not only did they figured out what code wasn't working, that they moved it, and but they didn't have space to move it to anywhere because, you know, in a system like this, you don't just have free memory just lying around willy-nilly, right?
And that's what we should have put in there.
Oh boy. And they had to chop up the code into sections to make it fit into any little nook and cranny of the memory that they could find. Maybe it's due to some other shutdown system might, I don't know, free up some memory or something like that. I don't know how it works, but geez, man, that's unbelievable. Yeah. And they made it work. Like
the most badass sustaining engineering job ever, you know?
And they set the code. Sustaining engineering. This is the model.
Like the best.
Oh,
yeah.
God. For those who don't know, there is a joke in, it isn't a joke. It's a real role. And hi to everyone who works in sustaining engineering.
Me, Dave. I was not even close to this school.
You were sustaining engineering at Keithley. I kind of was, but I never had the official title. So technically I'm not. I wasn't in sustaining engineering.
You couldn't hack it, man. You couldn't hack it.
But given that I was the only one who knew the system and a company I used to work at,
we'll count it, yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, last man standing.
So, yeah. They even contacted me after I actually
– There you go.
After I left the company. So that's how you tell. Yeah. Yep. So I guess I'm an unofficial sustaining engineering. Yeah, this is a thing in companies because you've got to maintain products for like 10, 20 years, stuff like that, uncommon, right? It's not uncommon. People are used to the consumer rubbish these days, but in all sorts of industries, countless industries, they're like, you know, you have to guarantee to your customer, especially if they're a defense customer or a government customer or something like that, you have to guarantee. You know, that's why there's some of your banking system is still running on bloody Fortran or COBOL code somewhere, right?
Yeah, that's because, why yours is powered by koalas and kangaroos. Exactly. It's actually just them on a treadmill.
That's it. And still, turning someone gears, comes in and loops the belt every,
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It throws in some more whatever kangaroos eat and a little bit more whatever grass, koalas eat.
Grass, it leaves. Yep.
Yeah. Brush.
Oh, boy. This is fantastic. This is just great.
Really nice.
They made it work. Jesus. Heroes. All of them.
Hats off, folks. Hats off. Yeah, that's great.
That's amazing. Anyway, I do believe it's like back to, they're going to relocate and adjust some other affected portions. Oh, they've got more to do.
I love thinking about this too, of just like the oblivion of it all. Like the, so this thing is, it's still going, right? It's amazing.
Yeah, 46 years later.
Yeah, 46 years. But like, why not 100 years, right? I mean, like, right. There are some practical limits in terms of like the onboard power source and just the distances required.
Oh, yeah, it will eventually.
How are we going to be able to listen to it eventually, whatever. But just like, really, I'm going to go into sci-fi mode now. But like, it's like one of my favorite things in sci-fi books, like that are about space travel, of just like, just the vast distances and stuff like that. Like,
And they always have to have
like literary tools to like, get around certain things. I'm mostly talking about the Bobaverse books, which book 5 is coming later this year, apparently. I definitely mentioned on the show before. It's
all right.
The first book is We Are Legion, We Are Bob, but it's about a software engineer who basically gets trapped inside a computer, and then he like goes and explores the universe. It's fantastic.
So
five out of five stars.
So it's Tron in space, is what you're saying?
No, because he also replicates himself. So it's like basically like talking to yourself a lot too, so it's like he like has different versions of himself all like developing personalities. It's AI in space, so it's kind of like Hal, but like self-aware Hal who's like actually based on a human, so like it's like personalities, right. There's a lot more personality, yeah, but okay. Yeah, that's right. It's not bad. Right. And the audiobooks are just awesome, just some of my favorite. I just re-listened again, so yeah, Bobaverse. Oh, everybody should listen. One of my favorites.
Yeah. So, yeah, how they can keep this going after 46 years is remarkable, given the fact that they're shutting down the Chandra space telescope. They're shutting it down.
I don't know about this.
Even though there's nothing wrong with it. Slashes budget. Budget's gone. Like, I can send you a link. Like, yeah. It's they just don't want to fund it anymore. So it's just going to sit there. It's just going to, they're just going to like, meh. Like
mothball it in space.
Yeah, I guess just mothball you know.
Does it like have a, I guess I don't know what you do when you like go into low power mode and you have it ready to wake up later.
I don't know what they'll do, but the Chandra, and that's only 24 years old, I think. It went in 2000.
That's a baby.
Yeah. Oh, man. Unbelievable. Yeah, compared to, I know, and it's $68 million a year to keep it is like going.
It's
apparently
not nothing, Dave.
It's not nothing, but you know, like in the scheme of things, it's nothing.
Yeah. Yeah. Right? In space dollars, that's probably low overall. Yeah.
Although I don't understand how you can spend that much money. It's just a handful of geeks in a room, right? Yeah. But it's a handful of geeks. How do you spend $68 million on a handful of geeks in a room?
Divide. I don't know. What's an easy person cost?
Well, I don't know. Let's assume it's $250K carrying cost.
Yeah. $250K carrying cost.
Right. Okay. So it's $250K. What, you can't afford.
Million. So it'd be like 68 times four.
Like you can't afford a handful of people for the next
272
like, you know?
People. Yeah. I don't know. Maybe it takes a lot to maintain it.
It's not 68 million. Yeah, but how? Why? I don't know.
It'd be 272 like pretty decently high end average salary. So.
Yeah, maybe if you've got a like model, you know, like if you've got a, I don't know, maybe they've got a hardware duplicate somewhere and they have to keep that running and, you know, things
like. Yeah,
like
an operations center.
Yeah, something like
you
that.
You got to keep the vending machine stock. Yeah,
right.
That's not nothing.
That's not nothing. But at least you could pay to have them at least continue to talk to it until the wheels fall off the billy cart, right? Surely just like, as I said, like a handful of geeks in a room. Just talking to it until something breaks is like, well, at least do that.
I don't know. Maybe this is the way to save it, though, too. Like, if it's just powered down and go into, like, a dormant
mode. That's justification because they don't want to – they want to steal the money for some other shit thing they're working on.
Got it. Yeah. That's too bad.
Anyway.
Yeah, I mean, space ain't cheap. Space ain't cheap.
No.
That's for sure.
No, it's not.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Anyway. Yeah. Oh, we could get into the whole Starship thing, you know.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
No. Chris doesn't want to hear about space, do you?
No, I don't want to talk about Elon.
It is a hobby of mine. Yep.
Yeah. Space is great, and Elon is involved, and he's not one of my favorite people, so.
No kidding.
Spaceship's awesome. Their Starship's awesome, though. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I just, I don't know anything about it, so otherwise. Right. I just watch the launches and, move on.
Fair enough. Yeah.
I, speaking of far-flung locations, I was just in Germany a week ago.
Oh, yes. All right. Yes. How'd it go? Yeah, yes. I forgot. Yes, you were.
It was good. Hawaii. You know, I am now realizing, so this is my third year, and I was just looking at my my sad little passport, which mostly only has stamps in Frankfurt, Germany.
Right.
Since I got it, because it was, a COVID passport.
They still stamp them, do they? I thought, don't they have chippy ones now?
It has a chip in it, but they still stamp it. I think people like to collect it, maybe. I don't know. I like it. It's an easy record keeping, I guess. I'm definitely being tracked in multiple ways. Like the amount of facial recognition happening these days. Like, okay. Yeah.
So do you have to scan your fingerprints when you go through the customs to get back into the US?
I used to, but they don't do that anymore. Now they just do face.
Oh, they don't really?
Yeah, so I have like global entry, and like they literally just like take a photo and they're like, "Yeah, we know who you are. <You're> Don't worry.
Don't worry."
Yeah.
And we now know you're about to watch this on YouTube, and we know you're about to follow this person on Twitter, and
Did you just bought a Chevy Bolt, right?
Right. Yeah. Oh boy.
Yeah,
it's not good.
Yeah. So yeah. Germany. Germany's great. Going to Nuremberg is cool historic town. I've been there 3 times now. I'm not going for the history anymore, but it's still interesting. And
is the only place you went there, or did you?
Yeah,
holiday time.
Gotta get back to the fam.
All right.
So, but even the thing that's interesting to me is like, so now three years in, the thing that is surprising is that the booth numbers don't change. I guess I would have expected that they...
What?
Like, I kept, asking, what booth are you going to be at? And everyone's just like, the same one as last year. They all have the same booth number year to year, because they all re-up. Right. And then they keep the same booth number. So, if you've walked through Embedded World, at least 3 years ago, the first time I went
It'd be exactly the same, as long as the same people
are there. Layout. Not exactly the same, but, significantly the same. So,
wow,
like,
that's interesting.
Yeah, I'm not sure why that is. Obviously there's different stuff in each booth, and the real reason to go is for people and that sort of thing. But it was a little surprising.
Okay. Yeah. Right. Well, I'm sure they would boot you if somebody wanted your size booth or something and they're willing to pay more, or I don't know.
Thing. They won't. Really? Okay. The booths change size, but they keep in the same location, basically.
Interesting.
They jigsaw them together. So, the Zephyr booth has been changing size. It's been getting bigger. But they just say, we'll just change where the aisle is. Or maybe someone who was behind, they get shuffled around. Like, there is some shuffling.
That's fascinating, yeah.
Yeah, but, it's mostly
so
kind
every
of
year,
by
it's
movements.
A dynamic assembly process of all the stands, but they try and keep the layout the same. They keep the layout and the number in the same.
Like this year, Raspberry Pi was in a slightly different location.
Okay.
And I could picture them in both spots, but so they moved, and people do move, I guess, but it was just surprising me to realize that a lot of things don't move, and I'm not sure if that's a good thing or a bad thing, but it was something I noticed. So.
Right. There you go.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. Hmm. A lot of every time you saw a camera this year, I've already said this on a live stream.
Hey, camera.
But every time you saw a camera this year, if you were walking across a video feed, you were almost certain to be enclosed in a little box that says human or
tracking. Okay, so there's AI tracking everywhere.
They all want
to
show that stuff.
Yeah
they
everyone just, wants to. Yep.
Yeah, I don't. Kind of. It's fine. that was kind of one of the main trends that I noticed. Yep. Obviously, there's a lot of new silicon and new things out there. New Cortex cores, a lot more RISC-V. That's kind of interesting, but not like banner level. Like we are RISC-V everywhere. There's a RISC-V booth, of course, it's just kind of showing off wares and showing off demos and stuff like that. So year to year, and also I didn't really walk around all that much, to be completely honest. I was busy, but yeah, not a ton of trend stuff noticeable otherwise. Trying to think of the things I saw. I didn't stop. I really, if I was there as an EEV blog correspondent, I'm sure I would have stopped by the test measurement stands more. But
but you don't.
I'm not in the market for that stuff now either.
You're not
you know?
Really a T&M enthusiast, are you?
No, I'm
not. Even though you used to work at Keithley, you just. punching
your
card.
Not into like specsmanship and stuff like that. Like right. the, you know, the forum members are like really into like digging into specs and stuff like that. And I'm just, okay. You know, if I could afford one of the new ones, I'd probably start doing some comparison shopping, but
right.
Yeah.
We get it. You're not a hobbyist. Yep.
Yeah. It's cool. I'm not sure this is a great place for hobbyists though either. It's like, you know, there's people are like going to be like, oh, when are you buying? You know?
Oh yeah. No, of course they're harvesting which company you're from. How many, what exactly. is your budget this year? You know?
Yeah, yep. exactly. Yep. Exactly. Trade show kind of stuff. The most surprising thing is that, this year is a little bit different. And then in October, there's supposed to be an Embedded World US.
Right.
It's in Austin in October. I did not see that mentioned a single place throughout the entire conference.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. Okay. I don't know if it's like maybe not the same groups, but I'm going to try and be there. I don't know if other people are going to be there. I talked
Where
to all the chip
gonna
companies.
Where's it going to be? I assume LA.
Austin, Texas.
Oh, Austin, Texas.
Austin, right. Texas. Yes. My former city. I used to live there before I knew you, actually.
Right. There you go. Yeah. I don't know. The first time I met you, you were from Cleveland.
Cleveland, Ohio. Yep. Me and.
I think that's still on our website somewhere, isn't it?
Oh, I'm sure it
is.
From
Great Cleveland and Dave's from Sydney. Yep.
Yep. the old microphone going around the globe to the two cities.
Yeah, the old logo. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I haven't been back to Austin since 2014, I think. So it's been 10 years at this point. And that was like for South by Southwest. I went back after a while. So, yeah, I'm going to try and go. But I talked to all these people like at the conference and be like, hey, you're going to be at Embedded World US? And they're like, we're going to wait and see. Guys, if none of the vendors show up and say that we're going to be there and pay for booths, it doesn't exist the next year.
Exactly.
You know, just, you have to like actually, someone's got to like put a toe in. So I'm going to officially state that I'm going to try and be there. And now all the chip companies are going to be like, well, Chris is going to.
Oh, well, maybe we should. They're all in.
Yeah.
Follow the leader. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. Well, that's interesting. Is there anyone out there who can confirm that engineering conferences and, you know, exhibition-y things are doing a downturn in the U.S.?
In the U.S., I could tell you that.
Really?
Just look at like what used to be out there. Like, right. well, not it's not
well,
recent.
This
I is not
know,
a recent thing.
I mean, don't follow. Sorry.
Oh,
I'm not
sure,
in the US,
sure.
I don't
well,
follow.
I mean, like you went to a couple events in the U.S. in the past.
Yep.
I don't think any of those exist anymore.
Oh, really? Wow.
I don't think Renaissance. You went to the Renaissance thing, right?
Yes.
They don't do a. Yeah. They don't do a big conference anymore. I don't think.
They don't do a DevCon. Okay.
Yeah, I don't think so. Yeah. I should probably double check Embedded Systems Conference is one that I used to go to all the time. That was in multiple cities. That got tossed around, and then basically the events company that ran it just went out of business. They just said, no, we're done. We're done in this space. I think they're still in the security space. I think they run Black Hat still. So some of like, you know, it's an events thing, but it was just like dwindling membership. So like the conferences that I think of kind of in our space in the US are like, obviously, I think CES is honestly one of the biggest trade shows, at least, which is insane.
That's consumer.
I know.
That's, you know.
It is, but all of it is consumer, but like all of the chip companies go there and show up. And so there's just lots of meetings and stuff like that. Right. Always surprising to me. It's just like, it's just a mass of people gathering. And so then that just becomes this magnetic, the gravitational thing almost. You know, it's like, well, we have to be there because other people are there. And because other people are there, we should all take meetings, blah, 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 blah. And it's just like, ugh. I don't want to go to Vegas in January. Yuck.
Right.
And so Embedded System Conference used to be this thing. And, you know, it kept shrinking year after year after year. And then all the chip companies kind of stepped away from it. I think it was an expensive thing for what it delivered. Fine.
Okay. Yeah.
That's now effectively dead. I haven't seen anything there. And now there's some small niche ones. Some of the really niche ones are still around. So like, and not small ones either, like Design Automation Conference is still around, but that's really specific to like layout tools. And then there's Design Con, which is in
that's right Design Santa Con there's Embedded World and Design Con.
Design Con though is really meant for like high speed design, right? So that's like like high speed interconnect and like board design and stuff like that. And so it's not like, it's not, if you were, say, you're a young impressionable person working in analog electronics, such as yours truly,
yeah.
it's a stupid place to go because it's just like there's nothing for you there, right?
Yep.
Yeah. And it's specific to like, all right, like all the PCB designers from Apple will be there, of course, right? Like it makes sense. They want to take meetings with, but it's not a huge trade show either. And then other things in the US, I'm coming up short. I mean, like,
well,
at least in electronic space.
There's the National Hardware Show. There's Westpac. There's Embedded Systems Conference, DesignCon, Printed Electronics.
Yeah, there's PCB West, PCB East. Yeah, those kind of things as well. But like, none of these are like kind of the same level of like Embedded World, even though it's called Embedded World, it's really an electronics show, right? I mean, it's like across the spectrum. Like, they should call it Electronics World or something stupid like that. But like, it's surprising that it is like embedded focus, but like that at least, fine, whatever it's. Whatever they want to call it.
I have asked Grok. Here is a list of electronics engineering shows in the US. Grok is the X.
It just made all this stuff up, right?
Right. They've got the Del Mar electronics show. I actually have a t-shirt from that. There's the magnetic show. There's the CES, consumer electronics. No, there's the consumer electronics and electronic components show by Global Sources. And CES, they're the only ones they list. So that was a lame list because they didn't include like any of the others we mentioned. So
I mean, because the thing is, they're not really like DAC is not really an electronics show, right? I mean, it's like really meant for like layout tools and including in the silicon space too. And there's other PCB West, PCB East, like I said.
Yep.
I think there's other silicon conferences. There's a ton of computing shows, so like IEEE style symposiums.
Yep.
But that's not a trade show.
No, right?
And then there's like electronics education stuff, like EES DSA, whatever the hell that is called. It's like the Department Heads Association of like electrical and computer engineer. ECEDHA, that's it. Yeah. So not a ton. I mean, like, and I don't know. It's fine, but I wish there was more in the US.
Well, you wish there was more. Geez, you know, we've got one here in Australia. Although there is National Manufacturing Week. I was invited to National Manufacturing Week by one of the exhibitors there. They wanted to know if I was showing up.
Right, but if you just look at the difference in amount of electronics being done.
And, I would agree. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. And like the other thing too is that like there are some trade shows in Asia. Like I feel like, you know, I've got like
why not
have big trade shows in like
quite a few,
Shanghai or Shenzhen and stuff like that. But
yeah, I get invites to those occasionally. Yeah.
Oh, you do? Okay. Like I don't actually hear about those at all. I feel like that would potentially be one to go to, but I don't know.
Yeah, exactly.
So yeah. Oh, Sensors Converge is another one too. That's also in the Bay Area. In June.
Well, I do believe I know someone who has experience doing running shows.
Yes, 300-person trade show in Chicago, Illinois.
Come on.
You're saying that I should take out multi-million dollar loans and start up a conference.
Absolutely. Okay. Absolutely.
Yeah, that sounds like
good... No, dude. You use someone else's money. Otherwise, you're doing
someone else's money. Yes.
There you go.
Right. And then when you lose it all, I'm sure they're just cool with it.
But they are. They will actually fund your next thing. That's the fun thing about
it. Dude, VCs, they're dumb.
They will fund your next thing.
Gather around, children. Let me tell you a story about a mythical creature named Adam Newman who burns money and then they give him more money.
They literally do.
I know they do, but that's on them. That's on them. They're That's the WeWork founder, if people don't know. That's the WeWork founder.
Yeah, sorry. WeWork. Yeah.
Yeah.
They've actually gone under, right?
They were in bankruptcy.
Bankruptcy.
Yeah, they were in bankruptcy protection at some point. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Got it. Yeah, I'm sure we talked about it. Probably. Who cares?
I think one thing that it probably tells me is that I think one of the problems in all this case is just that there's not travel budgets like it used to be. I think that is probably the biggest thing. Even if you had one. Say you had like a huge show in like Dallas or the Bay Area, or whatever, like just hardware companies don't have margin to send engineers They're like getting used to not sending people to shows, and it's, that kind of budget doesn't
expensive.
Come back.
Oh yeah,
it's expensive. Yeah, exactly. You know, like
during
engineers
the good times,
eat a lot,
I mean,
eat and drink a lot. You know,
yeah. I mean, yeah. When I was working at Altium, that was definitely the good times financially.
Yeah, sure.
And we had more people. We had more people on the more employees on the trade show stand than there were people attending. Like actually come into the stand. We set like 50 people. It was huge.
Yeah, that's nuts.
And like, you know, like it must
but I feel
have
like that kind of
a...
thing, it also ebbs and flows in terms of like the priorities of the executive. Like, I think it's just out of style right now, at least in the US right now, too. You know, so some things they have to feel like they have to be at. But even this year, I noticed a lot of people that I know at various companies were not at Embedded World because it's, like you said, it's expensive. And anytime it's like, it's not rip roaring where.
Yeah, they, yep.
Yeah.
And sometimes it, and that shows up in the yearly Christmas party as well. It's like I've worked at companies where we had our own fireworks display on Sydney Harbour.
What?
Yeah. Fancy. They had their own barge with fireworks. We were at the museum. We were at, what's the museum? There's a little tiny museum at the Rocks there. So the Rocks is like really expensive part of Sydney. And we hired that venue for our Christmas party. And we had our own fireworks barge on Sydney Harbour went off for like
That's
10
nuts.
Minutes of fireworks.
Yeah, yeah.
just to celebrate our companies. It was ridiculous, right? But they were the good times, and that was before they retrenched. That was a couple of months before they retrenched like a third of the company.
Yeah, that's why.
Right. they literally burnt the money. mean, it went up in smoke. It was pretty spectacular.
You know, the real cost of a fireworks show in Sydney Harbour is actually not the... It's not the cost of the fireworks. It's actually the replacement ducks you have to get once you burn up all the ones that the fireworks land on. So.
Ah, got it. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah.
All those drop bears. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. The drop bear replacement costs. Yep.
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 Oh, boy. Anyway. So, yeah. I would say that I would rank now, the last couple of years, as not good financial times. So, yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
I can see why. It's...
Anyway. Unless you worked at a broker like 2 years ago.
Ah, right. Yep.
Have I mentioned lately? I hope they all go bankrupt and that they lose their houses. Is that too mean?
That means you could lose your 401k. You want that to happen?
I'm talking about chip brokers, Dave. I'm talking about the people that
brokers.
Took advantage of.
Oh, I thought you meant like stockbrokers.
Come on.
I thought you were talking about stockbrokers.
Throw them under the bus with me. Come on,
chip
man.
Chip brokers.
Nobody likes chip brokers.
Although they just
stockbrokers.
They just discontinued. Breaking news. Straight off the teletype. Z80 of. Oh, sorry, I don't have a link. But Z80 have apparently announced that they're discontinuing. Oh, sorry, Zilog.
Zilog
are announcing that they're discontinuing the Z80.
Yeah. Zilog, a little fuse company. Boy, that's weird.
Little fuse. I was bought by Little Fuse.
Yeah,
what?
That's
really.
Yeah, that's what it says. That's what. Yeah,
I'll
send you the link.
All right. Oh, please.
Yeah.
Oh, that's hilarious. When you're bought by a company that makes little bits of wire that melt, a semiconductor company that's been bought by a company that makes little bits of wire that melt. I mean, oh, geez.
I what we can use these for.
Oh, that's bad. Okay. Where's the link? Show me. I got to see it.
Oh, sorry. It's in StreamYard. It's in StreamYard. Sorry.
Oh. Don't see it.
Yeah. New definitions of burn-in testing, right? It's like, well, you're going to be our test subjects, Zilog parts.
Oh, God. Yeah. Anyway, that's pretty sad. Z80? Because it's, you know.
I think it's, well, it's... Is it all Z80 or is it just the Z84 C100, C00?
Don't know.
Yeah.
Yep. Anyway.
Do things still use this? I guess they must, right? I mean.
A few legacy systems probably still use it.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Yeah,
there
but
you go.
Of course you can get the spin-off microcontrollers.
You know?
You can get the spin-off microcontrollers. I think they still have a small fan base.
Okay.
But yeah. Which is the Z8. It's the Z8 micro, I think. I think you can still buy those. Still people who use them swear by them. But I don't know. Legacy engineering. That's the key.
Did you ever use the Z80?
I have. I've worked on a couple of products that were Z80 based. In fact, that was my first job. Working on CCTV security systems. They were all Z80 based. I didn't actually design them, but I certainly worked on them. They were Z80 based. Yep.
And that was fun. Your thoughts? Your thoughts on it?
There's nothing wrong with the Z80. It's fine.
Okay.
It's a fine processor. You know,
I think it's a little before like, my time gonna, there, Dave. So
it's going to be a huge battle between the 6502 and the Z80.
Got it.
Fanboys, you know. So
Yeah.
Six of one, half dozen the other. It's a perfectly fine processor for its day. Got the job done. It's all you cared about. And then they spun off the instruction set compatibility into the single chip micros with the Z8 series and stuff. So, you know, yeah, it's great.
Yeah, okay.
But the popularity of the Z80 kind of died with the end of the home micro era, probably late 80s, early 90s at like most. So, anyway. Yeah, it kind of died. Whereas, you know, Intel's still going, right? It's still still backward instructions set, backward compatible, right back to the original 4004. You know, it's like all the 8008 at least, I think. So, yeah, anyway. But you can still buy the Z8s, Z8 micros, because not many people use micro controllers anymore, but there's lots of spin-offs from that. I think, don't quote me on that, but the Rabbit 2000 processor, which I used at one point, I think that was an instruction set spin-off from the Z80. So don't quote me, but I think there are quite a few that are spin-offs from the Z80, so it kind of lives on in many other architectures.
Yeah. Cool. I was watching your mailbag about the jumperless. I'd seen the jumperless.
Oh yeah, the jumperless breadboard. But hang on, I am correct. The instruction set of the Rabbit processors also closely resembles the instruction set of the Z80 Z180 family.
We've definitely mentioned the Rabbit on here. Okay, yeah. Okay.
Rabbit 2000. Yeah. I'm sure there's others that are all.
Yeah, because you used that on like a test stand you said or something like that.
On a test instrument. That. Yeah, that was designed. Okay. Anyway, yes, back to the breadboard.
Yeah,
the jumperless breadboard.
I had seen this one. So this is like one. So it's backlit, right?
It's backlit. There is a LED behind every row on the breadboard. It lights up individual channels. And I think it won the Hackaday Prize, or it was in.
That's where I've seen.
In
okay.
The, or it was in
That's
the Hackaday Prize.
It.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
So what's your take on it? I mean, like, is it?
Have you watched my video?
And now I haven't, sorry.
Oh, well, there you go. Okay, the too long didn't read from my video, because I did like 18 minutes on it or something in the mailbag.
Yeah,
it's quite
like
long, 18, 20 minutes or something. The TLDR is one of the most amazing ideas and executed concepts I've ever seen, but I don't get the point of it. I don't get the practicality of it. It's just like, I don't understand who it's for. Yes.
Education? Not education?
No, it's just, he just did it because, what's his name? Flux? I'm going to butcher the pronunciation.
Architeuthis
Flux? Sure. Architeuthis Flux, I think, is
I
the
guess
person.
If it's Latin, it's probably,
I'm
there's
sure
more,
he has a real name,
more,
but yeah, sorry. I forget, don't have a team.
Architeuthis?
I'm glad you can't pronounce it either. Yep.
Yeah.
Flux.
Yeah.
Anyway, it looks like he just
Mr.
did
Flux.
It for kicks, which is great. Yeah. Hats off. If I was still judging on the Hackaday Prize, because I have been a judge on the Hackaday Prize, it'd get top marks from me too, even though I think there's essentially no market for it. I don't see who it's marketable to. I just think it's really cool, right?
Yeah.
It's just, it's awesome. And some things can just be awesome for their own sake, right? Mm. It doesn't have to have a practical market, you know. There is a niche. But it's going to be incredibly.
I just remembered a product I saw in Better World that fits that same thing,
Same thing as cool, but like you're standing there scratching your head going, like, who's going to buy this?
Also education-based. It's also education. Oh, so right, like, okay. I think education becomes the default. So Robert Nelson, who works with Jason Kreidner on BeagleBoard stuff, he's a DigiKey employee. And they basically put together this new thing where it's basically like a down camera. I did a video about it, but I didn't publish it anywhere yet. It's like a down camera. And then you can have like four, maybe like six like board setups. So it'd be like a dev board. The one that they were showing was like a STM32 Discovery dev board with like LEDs and like a tiny servo. So basically, and then like a down camera so that you could basically kind of time slice and you could have someone log in. They could run their code on it. They could see the program execute and actually see the physical thing that happens, right? So like that's one of the hard things that you could always run a simulator and actually walk so Uri, who apparently works on this breadboard thing as well, the one that you're talking about, like I think WalkWee is like one of the best use cases of like, it's amazing, right?
Yeah.
Right, you get to see all your code working,
for those
whatever.
Who don't know what we're talking about, I'm sure we've done an episode.
Yeah, he's been on the show.
For those who don't know, it's basically a web-based simulator for different platforms for your Raspberry Pi, your Arduinos and stuff like that. And you can physically do everything in the web browser. You can write your code, run it, and you can see the board and you can see things light up.
You can have
it
talk to the internet through a emulated Wi-Fi connection too. It's unreal. You know? I mean,
amazing.
Uri is a magician, yes. Yeah. But I think the thing that still isn't there, right? One of the big things is that like, you know, you and I get into, we got into electronics for different reasons, but I don't know about you, but when I see an LED light up, it's still
lights
in me, right? I mean,
I did something. I made something happen.
I changed my environment. That is that is the constant. And like, and so, you know, it could be the most amazing VR thing in the world, but it's still in a virtual environment. Yeah, you know, like I love WalkWee, don't get me wrong, but it's still a little different. And so this serves that little bit different need. And I wish I knew the name of it. I should look up the name of it on the system I'm talking about.
I've done a video where I went where I toured the lab at the University of New South Wales, the engineering lab there. And during COVID, they did exactly this. They developed their own system where they would have cameras on little things and they'd have little motors which actually drive pots, which actually, you know, the little arm comes and the sliders can go up and down. And
Right. And it's like, and in an education context, it makes a lot of sense. I had looked at it from like a hardware in the loop testing, maybe that kind of makes sense. Mm. But like, I think for the price, it's at like $3,000 starting price. So it's like, it's not cheap either. So it's like, it's a tough sell, right? I mean, like, it's cool. It's very cool.
Sounds like the $4,000 Altium development board all over again.
That thing. What is the cost on the jumper list? What does that go for?
Ooh, don't quote me. It's like 300. I think it's like 300 US.
Yeah, I mean,
that's really pricey.
I can see, I mean, there's so many parts on it too.
Yeah, totally.
These things are amazing engineering. It's just
You know, the who's question, the target like, market?
Market and the product. Yeah, the product development piece. Yeah, it's tough. It's tough. Yeah. Wow. It is. It's gorgeous electronics.
I know. It's fantastic. I was just amazed. That's why I gushed over it for like 20 minutes or something, 25 minutes. Yeah. And then in the end, I had to admit, well, I don't understand who this is for. Sorry. But the author did actually get back to me. He actually commented on the video and said, yeah, fair, you know, yeah. Mm. Or something along those lines, I think. So, yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, he just did it for his own enjoyment, and he sells it on Tindy. If you want to buy it, buy it. If you think it's not suitable for your needs,
Oh, you linked to our interview with Uri on your video.
Yes,
Dave, you remembered us.
I know, exactly.
This guy's getting soft in his old age, linking to the Amp Hour. Look at that.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
Yep. Anyway. Yeah. Mentioned in video, too, I think.
I'm sure.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't you?
Yeah. There you go. Seriously. Promo. Jeez, our numbers are going to skyrocket. The amp hour numbers are just going to, like, to the moon.
Yeah. buy your amp hour tokens now.
Now. Well, yes. Oh, boy. Yep.
Yeah.
Anyway. Fantastic.
Yeah. What's coming up for the week for you?
Well, if I get some spare time, I do have that project I talk to you about briefly
We're not talking about that here. Are we talking about that here?
No,
I got a message from Dave at 2 in the morning.
Really. We can mention that.
I happened to be up at 4 in the morning, my time, because my son woke me up. But
right.
So I was like, yeah, I'll respond to Dave.
Well,
no big deal.
It's on the forum. I've actually got an EVBlog forum thread for it because I asked for people's advice on there. And basically,
let them dig. Let them dig.
But I've basically been. Multiple people have now confirmed that, you're not going to be able to do what you want. You'll have to find another solution. What I wanted to do is I wanted to take the what's it called? Bloody hell. I can never remember the damn name of this stupid thing. It isn't SIGROC, right? Which is a open source... SIGROC with a K, no CK, just SIG.
Yeah, ROK.
SIGROC is, if you haven't seen it,
it's a logic analyzer thing, isn't it?
Well, no, it's scopes, or multimeters. It's basically generic, an open source universal interface to almost every test equipment on the market. Its support is incredible. Like it supports my 121 GW multimeter, so you can hook up the Bluetooth of that, and then you can feed that in, and SIGROC can read it. And then people have written GUI interfaces around it. So SIGROC's basically
like
the driver. It's like a big, command line, drivery type.
Yeah,
thing.
Kind of like sounds like GNU Radio kind of thing, where it's like you can have plugins, plug-in marketplace type of thing as well, right?
Yep. Well, I don't know how it works at the code level, but it's all open source. Anyway, SIGROC, absolutely amazing. Interfaces to absolutely everything. Yeah, I think it started out as a logic analyzer thing or something, and then they branched out, and they supported multimeters and oscilloscopes, so you can do real-time capture and all sorts of things, right? I wanted to basically take advantage of that because it already has support for all these different multimeters, right? Mm. So I thought, hey, why not make use of something that's already written that can already talk to all these multimeters, right? That absolutely makes sense rather than rewrite it from scratch. And but I want that to run on a really flea-powered micro. And everyone's pretty much confirmed with me, no, it's designed for Windows, Linux, and there's too much bloat in it to sort of maybe you could if you put a lot of effort. You could cut out only the bits of code that you wanted and then run that. I was hoping that someone had already done it.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the requirements already, you could see it like SIGROC meter, right? So it's a it's a GUI for the GUI piece, right? But requirements, Python 2 or 3, PyQt 4,
right,
PyQt graph and libsigroc.
So it uses all Python libraries and everything, right? Yeah, so
the maximum interface and compatibility, that's
totally
the way to do it, right?
That absolutely
makes sense.
You started
from a computer.
Yeah. It's just absolutely, unfortunately, that's not what I need for my project. I need ultra low power. Like by low power, I mean run off a couple of AA batteries for hundreds of hours, kind of thing.
Yeah.
So,
I think the trade-off here is going to be that maximum compatibility and flexibility. You're just not going to have that.
No.
That's why
I'm going to have to write it from scratch.
Low power devices are always more. I think if you were going to do something similar, right, you don't make a new SIGROC, but you make something in the mode of SIGROC where
in
it's
the
like
style
open.
Of that, yes, that has that people can easily add their own products and stuff like that.
Tough moving on new things like that. Yeah.
Although, see, how would you, because, if you're talking about like a little micro like that, how would you let users add different functionality? I don't think you can, because it's not like you can pop in an SD card or something and then have a text file with some commands in it, because then your micro has to be able to read an SD card and then, blah, 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 blah,
I see. You could have a standard where it's maybe reading a JSON file that helps to decode it, right? So using some kind of third, some kind of other data source, so it's not compiled in. It's reading it at runtime.
Right.
Something like that, maybe.
Maybe.
That's tougher,
maybe,
right?
Yeah.
But then you now make a new file format. People have to match that.
Match
and
that.
And if there's
and
special things on
blah,
top of it.
Blah, blah, and,
you could always do things like ZMK is a type of keyboard out there. So it's like a keyboard ecosystem.
Yeah.
And it's like the Zephyr. It's based on Zephyr. That's how I know about it.
Oh, okay.
And people have different versions. They compile it for a lot of different hardware that's out there. Like you can go and retarget it. So you could have that kind of thing too, where you basically are targeting different hardware. And then if someone wants to introduce a new thing that this would run on. So say you're building a piece of hardware and then I want to make a different piece of hardware that runs the same project, right? Say, assuming it's an open source project, you could say, hey, Chris, well, it's the onus of responsibility is on you to go and make that compatibility layer for that hardware.
Right.
And maybe you do or don't support everything that the original does.
Got it.
But then you call out what does or doesn't work. That's a little bit different than like the decoding, like you're talking about, though.
I would separate. Yeah. Like you can separate those things, you just have it hard coded in, and then if you want to add a product, well, you just have to recompile the code.
Yeah,
you know, you just like there that's is a new, obviously easier.
There's a new thing in Zephyr. I know I talk about Zephyr a lot, but there's a new thing that was just introduced, which is kind of not unknown, but like it's new enough. It was just in 3.5, which was just released a couple weeks ago. It's called linkable loadable extensions, LLEXTs. And that could be, so basically that's like a kind of like a plugin system for an embedded system, right? So it's like, you would have an ELF that would be, you basically load at runtime and you say, hey, the flavor of this device is now A or B or C, right? And then listening for these different protocols, whatever.
That sounds like the avenue
like a cartridge system, video games, you know, like you need like a cartridge system and then you sell each one for like $25. Nintendo for poisoning my mind. This is how it all works, right? You
know, well, they were actually based on ROMs, the old cartridge systems. They were just ROMs, and you executed a ROM from address 100 or something.
You know? I mean, that's basically what it is, right? A linkable loadable extension is basically like, okay, you're going to start from here.
Yep.
Run your code from there.
Run code, and here it is. Here's your ROM that you have just plugged in, you know.
Yep. Yeah, make sure you save your game. Yep. Yeah.
So, I don't know. So I'm probably, I think that has been answered, that no, I can't really use SigRock for that. So I'm just going to have to write it from scratch. So at this stage, I have to investigate how hard it is to have a USB host that actually connects to a multimeter. You know, how much code's involved in doing that and then extracting data from it. I don't know off the top of my head.
I don't know how much you want me to mention of our conversation, but I feel like there's an interface layer you're not mentioning that would make it a little bit easier.
The GAT.
Yeah, Bluetooth, yeah. Yep. Bluetooth and like, you'd have to like have a lot of different listeners out there for Bluetooth messages, and you'd also have to potentially pair with the remote device, but might be a little bit more abstracted.
Like it has to pair with it. So how does that happen at the code level?
I don't know if they all do. Some of these might just be spitting.
Remember
the toothbrush, Dave.
You could just listen, right? That'd be the way to do it. If there's no negotiation,
that would be great.
If it just spits it out, I probably need to fire up my 121 GW and put it into a Bluetooth analyzery thing and see what it spits out. Maybe.
Sure.
So I can't. Yeah, we do have some of it documented. I mean, we've got the commands documented, but if it's just continually spewing out via a standardized GAT message or something, I don't know, talking out my ass, then great. Then you don't have to pair with it. You don't have to pair with the device.
Not to go back to our toothbrush conversation, but like this is basically what home. It's basically like your device you're talking about is kind of like acting the same way that Home Assistant is, right? Where it's like it knows, you know, some subset of devices, tens, hundreds, thousands, whatever it is, of like Bluetooth devices, and it knows the various messages and like how to then go and decode those messages. And it does actually pair with them often as well. Not all of them, but I think some of them can actually pair. Yep. And so, but then once you have that, now it's just listening to data and decoding it and potentially pushing stuff back down the pipe. So
here you go. And I have to do that with several different meters, and if it looks like
all you got to do is start Home Assistant for DMMs.
Got it.
You know?
Yep.
Yeah. And run off a couple of batteries.
Excellent.
Forever. Yeah.
I'm sure that's coming to the EV blog store soon. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway.
And code written by Chris.
Right.
Run for your lives. Run for your lives. It's gonna blow.
Oh boy. Yep.
Yeah.
Oh, well, any last minute things? Because our amp hour's up.
It's not up yet. Remember, we started 3 minutes in. So
that's why I'm winding down. I know.
Dave, you just...
That's why I'm asking for last calls. I'm asking for the dregs. This is the dregs, right? This is the dregs of the show. We need something suitably dreggy.
Have you used any of the 3D capabilities from the cheapy PCB manufacturers out of China?
No, I haven't. But I've heard, like, every man and his dog's doing that these days.
I mean, it's so cheap. I mean, it's crazy.
Yeah, I know. It's crazy. I think one of them, or maybe a couple of them, probably more than a couple, have sent me an email. Hey, do you want to try our 3D printing service? We'll do it free for you. We'll help you do a video. We'll help you come up with project ideas for you. I don't want to advertise your cheapy.
It's got to be fine, but it's just amazing. It's just amazing.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Thinking about what is possible these days.
No, it's nuts. There's no barrier to a startup having a one-man band startup. I'm talking Midnight Engineering Garage having a schmick-looking product, like a schmick-looking low-run prototype. Like, you could have, build, 100 of these things for not much cost. Yeah. Like, tooling cost be damned. There's basically no tooling cost anymore. It's basically gone.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it got to the point where, I have a system that I set up where I'm basically like 3D printing on my machine, and then I have like some milled out boxes and I'm like customizing that, and I showed you the PCB front plate and stuff like that before. But I got to the point where I was like, well, I'm doing all this work and I've paid extra for milling out these off the shelf boxes, but like at a certain point it's just like I should just, it almost like introduces bad design practices, because it's like, well, I could just design my own, right? Like, I don't feel like I should be starting from Chris designing a 3D enclosure, right? Because I'm just not as good as like some engineer at Budboxes that is designing this thing with draft angles and like highly manufacturable is super high volume.
Yep.
Like, I'm going to be like, oh yeah, half a millimeter thick walls, no problem. Plastic part.
Right.
Like the first ever 3D print I did that was SLA based, and it like caved in on itself.
Nice.
And they're like, we'll make it for you. Who cares? You're paying a lot of money.
Exactly.
But it is really at that level of like, I don't know, you could do it, I guess. And like you said, it could look good, even if it's like poorly made, it could look really good.
Well, I was just 3D printing something yesterday. And I was just thinking about this, because I had another 3D printer manufacturer contact me and said, hey, we're fans of your blog. And they are, like, apparently the founders are fans, apparently. They wanted to, hey, can we send you our latest printer or whatever? And I was going, well, I've already got a good one. It's like, what am I going to do with another one, kind of thing? Right.
And not firing that one up either, right? I mean,
I was using
it that often.
And that's it. I use it every 6 months. And I found out that the PLA material, if you leave it sitting too long, it just goes all brittle or something, and you have to re-hermetically seal it if you want to, right?
Yeah.
If I get one of those fancy ones with like five different types of material and five different colors all lined up in the spools, that's all great. And then I use it for 5 minutes, and then I don't use it for another year. What the hell?
The startup cost. And at that point, you should just go and use some other service.
I should just go use a service. I was thinking this. Like, I used to make all my own boards. Right, I used to make a ton of my own boards.
Exactly.
Even for companies I worked at, I would actually etch my own boards. Right, and then this was back when it took weeks and it cost thousands of dollars just to get one prototype board. Right, really? Just one single sided, or actually double. I was doing double, and you make your own via feed throughs and stuff. Sure. But it made sense back then. But now it doesn't. It doesn't make sense at all. And maybe 3D printers go in the same. 3D printing's going the same way as well.
I think in a lot of ways, yeah, I think so.
I mean, it's always nice to have something in your hand in like an hour, but
I mean, if there's ever, let's say, a global conflict with countries where a lot of these parts are sourcing from, the people that are good at milling and machining and doing their own printing and whatever, they're going to be laughing all the way to the product being done. But like, until then, there's pretty quickly you cross over from like the, so like, even if you're like a great machinist and you want to have that skill, which is great, like you should learn how to do that sort of thing, whatever, like the amount of time it goes from like when you go from 1 to 10 to 50, somewhere between 1 and 10, you're already like way beyond the cost of making it, right?
Yes.
You're becoming a manufacturer you should be, someone else should be doing that, right? You should be going at least to a local manufacturer, and then that's expensive. And I'm not saying that low cost hardware is the answer to all things,
But as, but especially sure helps. In the days of like now, the modern days of Tindy and stuff like that, where anyone can set up their little storefront and they can, you know, send it into channels and they can suddenly be, you know, get like 100 orders or something like that, you know?
Yeah, like super like, niche.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. And it's like, I don't know. Anyway, but yeah, I was just thinking that just the other day with the 3D printer, I thought, like, you know, even if I had these high-end 3D printers, is it worth me even keeping them? Like, and actually keeping them in, like, actual working order, you know, keeping them, like, maintaining them.
Yeah. But, yeah, the cost of space and...
Space, and clutter. Effort and mucking around, is it, like...
Yeah, time, totally. Yeah.
I think the answer for me is, yes, it's worth having one, like, you know, set up so that, you know, at least I have something to, you know.
Sure. Yeah, but, like a backup, right?
Yeah.
Sure.
Right.
If people want a real fun listen, go back about, what was it? Probably about 10 years ago.
Right.
As I worked myself into a pretzel knot, as I try and convince myself that I need a CNC machine.
I know.
It was great. Boy, howdy, did I not need one. I will say I learned that I knew nothing about machining, and that was great.
And
I learned a lot of bad things.
I just thought about that just the other day. YouTube spat me up a video recommendation. I can't remember the channel, but somebody's channel was that is worth getting a micro mill? Is it worth getting your own micro mill? And I watched like some of it, and he's going, oh, yeah, nah. Like, you know, it's like...
There are reasons to do it, but the answer is probably if you're going to get a big mill later. And the answer for me was never going to be that.
Yeah, exactly.
I think if I could go back, I mean, I won't change anything about what got me to where I am right now, but like if I could go back and tell myself anything, it would be get better at 3D modeling. That is like, that is the skill that you need, right?
Yes.
In all this stuff.
No, it's like, totally. I need to spend the hours to learn 3D modeling. Yeah.
3D modeling and then the next step after that is not go and buy a mill or a 3D printer or anything like that. It's go and like get your stuff made and then get yelled at by someone who knows what they're doing.
And then
they're like, look at this. You have no draft angle here. Like this is never going to inject from a mold.
Yeah.
This is never going to do this. Yeah. This is a terrible design. Like, great. Like
great.
That would be
feedback. Yeah.
Yeah. That would be, but that's hard to do because of the cost and all these other things. So anyways, try and get as much of like the pain pulled forward as you can, right?
Right.
Get yelled at by the graybeard engineer that fixed the friggin' Voyager 1 software.
Yeah.
You know, get that person to like teach you things and you will be in a good spot.
And
keep listening to the Amp Hour because we'll have some nuggets in here too, I think.
Yeah.
Someday.
I also got approached from a company, I don't actually remember their name. They're developing a PCB printer. Yay! And they, you know, love your channel, everything else. Do you want us to, you know, do you want to like evaluate one of our PCB printers? And I'm going, like, and I had to, like, they're a startup, I think, and they're like, and I like reply back, like, sorry, dude, I don't think there's actually a market for these. I'm so, like, it's so niche. And once again, like, I think they think that everyone's going to have one of these, you know, and like, and I'm going, well, and like they were, you had to buy their material or something. Cause if you use their special FR, like their special substrate material, you could do this. And they had like, pre-set boards, kind of like a perf board that had preset vias in them. And so that you could, but didn't you know, you can design your prototype around these boards that already have the plated through vias on them and you can just route your circuit within that. And it's got, oh my God. It's like, sorry, dude. No one's going to do that.
Yeah.
Like, no one's going to do it. I'm sorry, but your product is like, I hated to tell them that, you know, but I'm, that's like, I can't see.
The market will tell them.
Yeah,
eventually.
The market will tell them.
And you know what? If you're wrong, then you'll find out eventually
totally.
Too. Like, that's how it goes, right?
And totally, if I'm wrong and everyone thinks this is the greatest thing since sliced bread, but I've been in the industry for too long to know it's not the greatest thing since sliced bread. It's so niche. Once again, there'll be a few niche people who think, oh, yeah, win. We need this. We work at the NSA and we definitely need to print our own PCBs. We don't want to send it out to, you know, to China or whatever, or even to any other company. We don't want to send it outside this building. We want to do everything in-house. And yeah, fine. Okay. You know, you can sell some machines to companies, you know, like that. But yeah.
That's tough.
Yep. But anyway, I didn't ghost them. I gave practical and they actually thanked me for my feedback. You know, they thanked me for my honest feedback. So, you know, yeah, hopefully it helped. But
that's good.
Wish them best of luck. Nameless company who I forget. I'm sure you can go find them.
Yeah.
Anyway, there you go. That's it.
All right, man. Well, I think now we're done.
We're done. Catch you next time.
We have an extra 10 minutes.
Yep.
Yeah.
Bye.
Bye.